Hi, I'm Michael LeFevre. Please make sure you've heard our extended review of the first episode of Season 11 of Beyond Gilead before listening to this podcast. This is the sixth episode in this review series, titled Ruined Story.
OTR is back! No superheroes, just spies. And with the camel.
I'm Ryan Matlock.
I'm Michael LeFevre.
Oh, hey! Austin's back!
Hey!
We're three shadowy fans of Beyond Gilead.
And today we're reviewing 11-6, Shadow Agent X, by Laurie Twitchell.
So join us for episode 143 on our return to Gilead.
Hey, welcome back, Austin. How was the time travel for you?
Oh, I feel jet lag, but I think I can do this podcast.
Well, you missed two very heated episodes, and that's not to say the one that you were on wasn't heated, but things got rough. Hopefully things will get a little bit lighter here. I personally don't think they will, but you seem to be really positive about this episode. Summary for today's episode, I guess. This is another WWW episode. I don't have a summary written up for this one. Again, it will be eventually on the DGL wiki, but Justin's got a moral dilemma at work, and then he goes to WWW with Tim, and they hear a story about Shadow Agent X that somehow corresponds to a story that Michael, Haley, and Tim are hearing at Grace's house about Jericho and Rahab and the spies. Austin, go for it. We already know how I feel about this episode. Go for it.
Okay. So I was on the episode when you guys reviewed the showdown back then, and I liked that one quite a bit. I wasn't on for Coriopolis.
Coleropolis.
Which I was fine with that, because that one of the three WWW adventures, that one's my least favorite. But I think this episode might be the best of the three.
Oh.
Because the first episode, it was a very small portion of it. And
sure.
It wasn't much of a story, per se, like a story arc as much. But this one, I think it has a lot more airtime with it. And I really like the parallel that we get where we have the Bible story. We think it's going to be just a regular Bible story like that with Jonah and the blind man. And it goes back and forth from Grace talking about the Bible story, like kind of explaining some things in between to the old time radio, OTR, by the way, in case you didn't get that in the haiku.
Oh, okay.
But it's, oh, you didn't know that?
No, I didn't know the abbreviation. No.
Yeah, he's more of a new time radio
well,
fan.
Well, you know it now. Okay, I'll stop. Anyway.
Don't I forget
but
it.
Yeah.
I want Odyssey references these days. Anyway, keep going, Austin.
But yeah, I just like the unique factor of this, where it's basically, instead of just a story that's similar to a Bible story, and then we find out later that it's a take on a Bible story, we get it in between. There's no confusion with that, if someone's
sure.
wondering about that, but I think it's not too on the nose.
It's
and I like this different way of hearing the Bible story. I love biblical fiction and things like this where you look at it in a different light. Like, I would have never have pictured having the story in World War II. I think that was a brilliant move. Because I've thought about this episode, listened to it. I think it's really clever in the way it goes about it, and I didn't really see that coming. Like, I don't think I ever expected this episode to be like this originally when I first heard it. But one thing I like about this one, it's a complete story. It has a lot of really funny lines, which Coriopolis unfortunately didn't. Coriopolis, it just seems like a lot of overdramatic stuff.
I actually laughed more in Coriopolis than I did in this one.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, this episode is very much my kind of humor. And
sure.
If you want to hear some, this is just a plug here, but if you want to hear humor like this episode that both me and Michael are in, listen to Matthias Falk and Private Eye, because
you won an award for that
this
episode.
This episode probably.
I'll never get over that.
What's
you
that?
Won a, you won an award for that episode. That's how great you are at audio drama, Austin.
Well, you certainly had a hand in making it good.
My audio quality is awful in that, one.
Well, that's the editor's fault, not yours.
Oh, he's actually right.
But
he's
that kind of humor I really like. And it's a parody, and bringing some OTR knowledge here. A lot of people may be familiar with Abbott and Costello.
Yes.
You know, who's on first.
Yep, I definitely noticed they had a lot of jokes about,
yeah,
like,
why kind of who was on first kind of Abbott and Costello kind of routine. But in the old-time radio episodes of Abbott and Costello in the later years, they did a parody sketch at the end called Sam Shovel, which was a parody of Sam Spade. And it was very much like this episode, where it's very kind of not quite. I think that one's a little more absurdist humor. This one, not quite as much, it's a little more grounded, but it's that kind of humor where you're poking fun at these different phrases or, you know, confusing somebody, things like that, which I had thought this episode was written by John Fornoff. I was expecting it to be that. I went to the credits like, wait, this is Laurie Twitchell. And I think she got the formula for what makes a good WWE adventure better than John Fornoff did in the first time and better than her first effort with this. I think this episode has, I guess we'll get into like the, you know, surrounding plot with Justin, things like that later, but as it stands on its own, I think it works really great. The jokes are hilarious. And
okay, can you list some of them?
Also, yeah, so just like also like, you know, the different code phrases, like, you know, it's a Shirley Temple with a side of oysters and coffee dipped in chocolate, or like, you know, he's a shoemaker's wife, this really ridiculous stuff. Like, it sounds definitely like a code. It's poking fun at how absurd it is.
Well, can you tell me why that's, like, can you explain why that's funny? Because I honestly never found one of those actually funny.
Well, it's funny because it's poking fun at how bad it is. It's kind of, okay, this is, like, because why I keep saying, like, oh, I don't understand what you're saying.
Well,
it's, like, poking fun
at
code words overall as, yeah, it's supposed to be different. But with this, they kind of kick it up a notch where it's, obviously, this is a code, but it also sounds really stupid.
Well, he says that in reference to his isms that he has, like, the ship sails at midnight when the sun is high in the sky, and like a bug on a windshield and the wipers are coming. And that's what he has a reference to. You know what? Even I speak English, and I don't know what you're talking about. That's I think, specifically what that line is in reference to. And whenever there were those lines, I thought, okay, these are all strange, but I don't know the old-time radio to know that it's a parody. Do you have to be an old-time radio fan for this to be funny?
I mean, those specific phrases, I don't think so. I think it's kind of poking fun at the cliches, like cliche lines with, you know, like butter over a hot grill and things like that. Like someone that's over-relying on cliches.
Well, I didn't hate that. It was the thing where the narrator says it, and then the character says it, and then it doesn't really make sense in the context. Like, well, that was easy. Yeah, a little too easy. Like butter over a hot grill or something like that. It's like, well,
it's almost like, you know, they're listening to the narrator to a certain extent. And the narrator is kind of a little self-aware too, because like he's like in the beginning, Steve O'Dell, by the way, is the announcer for this.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It sounds like him. I'm pretty certain it's him, but like he kind of like, he never not was there or something like that. Like he kind of stumbles over that. That is kind of funny there. Just, it's kind of poking fun of just being how absurd this is and like taking itself not too seriously. But taking something that's kind of serious.
Well, let me put it this way. I need to figure out a good example here. Is there a previous episode of Gilead that, like, I know there are plenty of ones that we've really disliked. Is, just real quick, is there one that comes to mind of, like, one that really doesn't, really you don't like? Or that stands out as, like, that one doesn't sit well. Like, maybe the Lost episodes or something like that?
I'm trying to think here. I think the sock episode is one that I still don't like. I appreciate it a little bit better after you guys reviewing it, but still that's one that just is one that like, I don't really want to revisit that one unless I have to, like in a chronological listening.
I haven't made fun of the sock episode in a while.
It's a good one to make fun of. What if these jokes were in that episode or like scattered all throughout that episode? Would that make that episode better?
Not necessarily, because the style of humor and the story itself was not going for that, because also you get Michael just saying it, like, you know, singing the songs and things like that.
Okay.
If it was actually dramatized like this is, and like spent some more time on it, it would probably be funny, because it'd be not just a few references of, okay, this sounds really corny, this sounds really cringy. With this, you have that, but, you know, it's meant to be bad on purpose, not on accident, like it is with Mike.
Sure. Well, so my take on this is, I don't think, like, as much as, like, I admire creativity, I admire writing things in new settings and having flat, like, having homages to old-time radio, I don't think the old-time radio story was that well-written, and I'm willing to defend that. I don't think that the Grace parallel story, a B-plot, was that well-written, and I strongly disagree with the moral of this episode. And so all those three together, once this episode sort of set up what the moral was supposed to be in the like first or second scene, and then we get into this old time radio parallel, I'm already thinking, wow, I don't agree with you. I think you're I think you're very wrong there in what you're talking about. And the episode is making these jokes. I'm like, okay, but let's talk about that. And then the very last line of the episode is kind of heinous. It's like, okay, I don't know if humor is where I want to go with this episode. You know what I mean?
What was the line?
The line was, hey, Mrs. Gray, hey, Ms. Gray, I think I have something I want to tell you, or something like that.
Sure.
So, you know what
You thought that wasn't appropriate. Why?
That is completely inappropriate. That's not what you do in a work situation. Even if your employer is doing something wrong, there are two steps you do. One, go to your supervisor. Two, go to the police. Or report to, the labor relations board. You don't report to
for sure. Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
He's the Mitch of Downgrade Lane. He's the Mitch of Beyond Gilead.
They had hitmen. They killed his best friend. He knows what they can do. It's different. We don't even know what Peace of Heaven is doing at this point. I know what your joke is, but yeah.
Well, here's another thing too about, like, I think you feel like it didn't take things too seriously enough. But that's one thing I did like about this story, that the other two WWW adventures didn't have as much. The showdown a little bit. But I really like, the last scene they have with Hildy, and how they kind of stop because this is World War II, and they talk about, well, it's actually in the clip of the day. Did you want to play that?
Oh, okay, here we go.
The Jews, they are God's chosen people. Everyone knows this.
Yes.
What do you think God will do to us for killing his people? I don't wish to find out. It pains me. I know everyone that I love is in danger because of this, but I'm more afraid of God than of anything the German army can do to me.
Wow.
I must do this. I am meant to do this.
That clip kind of shows how it ends up, they do settle down into a more serious thing, which also, too, Laurie Krieg is playing Hildy there, I'm pretty certain, and yes. She does a great job. Like, she does a great job acting and with that accent. It's great.
Yeah.
And that scene kind of brings home, the parallel of the Bible story there. Makes it serious, but also parallels, too. Like, you know how, the enemies of Israel back then and also during World War II. And I like that it ends more on a serious note. I don't think it's a problem that we have comedy before it. And I think it's kind of like some old BTV episodes on the Odyssey. I think Ben Kemp brought this out in his reviews of a lot of the newer BTV episodes are very chaotic and comedic, but older episodes had a center or a kind of more serious story. So BTV Compassion, we had the story of Shoemaker Martin, or BTV Envy, we have David and Bathsheba. There's some funny elements of that, but it's still a serious story that kind of cements the moral around it. I feel like this episode kind of does that, where it doesn't feel like it's out of place that we're not having jokes every few seconds now, because we already know the situation. And one, it's a very serious topic about the death of Jews, and they take time on talking about the seriousness of that. But I think that's probably the criticism you have, being so serious at that point, but the comment before that.
No,
but I think
ending
on a more serious note is better than just having a serious part in the middle or just being completely comedy all the time.
I don't have any problem with that. The tone of the episode is not my issue here. The thing that I'm going for here is this is not a true story. This isn't a fictional story. This is a fictional story. This isn't even directly... This doesn't seem to be referencing directly old-time radio. Would you say that clip of the day is something that you would find in an old-time radio episode?
No, but then at the same time, too, you wouldn't have PDAs in the showdown. Well,
that's different. That's different.
Sheriff Bob and things like that. It's a little bit different. It's an old-time radio show, but it's meant to be a parody of it, but also kind of with more modern sensibilities in the terms of writing and what you put into it. I think Coriopolis is almost a little more accurate to how some old-time radio shows like Superman were than the showdown, or Sheriff Bob and Shadow Agent X's.
Well, one example from the showdown is that when there is a serious moment, when Tim realizes what he's been doing wrong, the episode ends, or the fictional episode ends. Here, my point is, it's not that there's modern sensibilities or that there are modern things in this audio drama, like the windshield wipers joke. I don't know if that would have been in an old-time radio episode, or that the audio quality is fine, or that the writing is slightly different, or that the joke is over and over and over again. Those are all fine as far as the parody goes. I might have an issue with them on a writing level, on a different level, but that's different. Here, I'm talking about, this is a meaningful conversation between a couple characters. This is pivotal to the story. This is what you've highlighted as the climax of the story. In fact, one of the emotional like emotional highs of the story. And if this, which is central to the story, is not a parody of old time radio, my question is, what is the reason that I have to see this as specifically special and therefore give it a pass? Because when I look at this scene, I think, okay, this seems rather obvious. You have a person who's betraying the Nazis and saying, oh yeah, the Jews are God's chosen people and we shouldn't be treating them that way. Okay, what does X have to do with this? We don't get any of his backstory. We don't know who he is. We don't know what his connection with this person is. We know basically nothing about our main protagonists here. And we get a fair bit about her, but it's basically, we hear, she's a Nazi sympathizer. She works with them. Oh, wait, no, she doesn't. Oh, she loves the Jews. She doesn't want them to be hurt. Oh, okay, and end of story. So that climax isn't the end of an arc. It's not the end of a tension that we've been waiting for, because we've known pretty much from the beginning that she was going, like from her first or second line, we know that she's going to have this turnaround at the end, or not even turnaround. From her first scene, she is sympathetic. There's not a doubt, I think, that she is going to turn these guys over. Maybe that's just me reading into it too much, but because this isn't a Bible story, this isn't the way this went in Joshua, and we can talk about that parallel too. But just on a story standpoint, I think this is fine, but I don't think it's outstanding. I don't think it really does much. Do you want to push back on that?
Yeah. So in the showdown, we have that kind of thing too, where, again, I talk about like the story itself isn't much of a story, and it ends with, you know, what's his name, Tim's character in jail, and it ends after that. Like, there's no actually resolution to that. It's the resolution in real life that's the issue. I don't think that's an issue in the story itself. Because also in Coriopolis, you know, there's no actual resolution. It just keeps on going the same way, with the characters doing the exact same things that they did before. I don't think it's an issue with this episode specifically, unless you're going to bring that up about the last two WWW adventures that we had.
Well, what do you mean? I didn't like those episodes either.
Well, yeah, I think that if criticism is for this one, then you probably have to do it for those ones too. They're kind of as a means of... Like, the first one was much more of one, like, them, like, the characters picturing themselves in it. Coriopolis, not quite as much. I mean, it's still characters from, you know, Coleraine playing the characters in the episode. But I think this one is a little more disjointed or disconnected from maybe the past two. This one doesn't refer to as heavily. We just have the end of, okay, finally doing the right thing. Okay, this might be dangerous. This might be... You know, basically, Justin's being like Hilding this. Like, she's going against the people that she's with.
So that's not my problem. That's not the issue I have with this. I'm talking about the writing specifically, in that if we take the old time radio drama out of this episode and just have it be its individual thing, I'd still have this criticism. That resolution.
Like, if it was still a straight adaptation of the Bible story, you'd still have the criticism?
No. I'm saying if we just cut the scenes of the Shadow Agent X audio drama out of this episode and just had those separately and I just listened to those, I would say, that scene at the end with Hildy, I don't think that was very strong. I would still have that criticism. And also, to your point about the other episodes, we are talking about this episode, so my criticism probably will still stand for those, but those episodes didn't have any resolution. This one did, and I thought it didn't work well. That is the specific issue that I have
here. You're sort of saying, like, as far as the reason that we have any connection to Hildy is because we understand the significance that
it's Rahab.
Had to Rahab. But apart from that, it doesn't feel like a character we got to know significantly. And then we were like, oh, wow.
Correct.
That's such a remarkable thing. And so it sort of depends on, like, are you looking at it from a perspective of this character has to be a character that stands on her own two feet, or is this a character that doesn't have to because we know what the parallel is supposed to be because the Bible story is going in the background.
Yeah, that's why I didn't say that the scene is bad. I don't think it is. I just don't think it accomplishes a lot, because when you examine it on its own, it's fine. But when you examine it in connection to the Bible story, it falls apart, because the spies are the Jews in the Bible story, and the spies are Americans in this story. So they're not the ones who are being oppressed. That's the difference, is that in history, what would have happened is these American spies we're from a prosperous country. We're from a country that was fighting for the rights of others and fighting against Germany for the Jews who could not speak up for themselves. In the Bible story, it was the Jews scoping out Jericho, and then the spies go back and they say, yeah, the victory's in our hands. And they go in and march around and destroy everything. That's what God commanded them to do, and that was the right thing to do. But the issue here is that the parallel doesn't work. And I'm not saying it's a problem when you take the story in isolation, but if we're taking this as we're like, this is supposed to be the Bible story, and Zach says at the end, wow, just like the spies, or just like Rahab, it's like, we didn't hear about Rahab. We heard about a different story. And I can go a little bit further, but I'll give you a chance to respond, Austin.
Yeah, like, it's not a perfect lineup to the Bible story. If they wanted to do that, they could have just told the Bible story like they have, you know, with Grace's story Bible, whatever,
yeah,
in past episodes. I actually enjoy this more than probably any of those other Bible stories that they did.
Oh.
Probably maybe the one about the blind man. I do like that one, kind of. But the other ones I'm kind of iffy on.
Well, that's funny because just a couple episodes ago, Ryan and I praised the beginning of Hold Lightly Part 1 for having a faithful Bible adaptation. It's like, if you adapt the Bible, you can't really go wrong with that. It's just a win. And whereas here, another thing about Rahab, Rahab is not a sympathizer with Jericho. There's nothing that's said in the Bible about whether or not she agreed with the cause. And in fact, if it was rumored that she did, there'd probably be an even less chance that she would have helped the spies. As it happens, she's just a harlot, and her faith in the works of the, like, what God did to the nation of Israel, that's what leads her to save the spies. It wasn't necessarily also that she was a sympathizer. Here, having it be in the story that...
Michael, you said sympathizer with Jericho earlier.
I know.
I think you meant Israel.
No. Right? Because in this fictional story, Hildy is a sympathizer with Germany, just as Rahab might have been a sympathizer with Jericho. That's what I mean by that.
Okay. I guess I understand. Okay.
We've talked a lot in the past. In fact, that one episode you had to skip back in season two, at the end of season two, The Girl Who Assumed Too Much, when the Bible story takes liberties. And here it's hard. I don't really think I've heard Ryan's take on this episode so far, but when you've got something that's claiming to be a Bible story and yet is nothing like the Bible story, except for this woman who agreed with the cause, or this woman who believed in God and hid these two men who were, well, do we even know that X and Y were Christians? We don't even know that. I don't know if we do. But
yeah, I don't think the point was necessarily that they were. It was just that they were helping the Jews by their actions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to give Ryan a chance to weigh in on this because I want to hear what he has to think about it.
Talking way too much. I've been like the Morrison kid. Sorry.
No.
Sure.
Don't go back there.
Go ahead, Hope.
Oh, no. Man, we're going to just be referencing that episode because grew in that episode.
Oh, no.
Just a little bit. I'll give my quick breakdown of my thoughts. I thought it was a very odd episode, and I don't know whether that means it's good or bad. I definitely kind of track a lot with Austin on a lot of the humor,
sort of.
I understand a lot of where he finds it humorous. Personally, I think I probably find maybe 50% of what Austin found funny humorous. Partially, and this is where I actually love to quick have a back and forth with you, Austin, just kind of like address several points of humor, because there's some where I'm like, oh yeah, that's absolutely hilarious, and others where I'm like, I don't get it, I get that it's trying to be funny, but I don't know why, and it might just be because I don't have the context. So I'm gonna go quick through a few joke types, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
And if I can, before we go through this, can I just say one thing here?
Yeah.
I wanted to appreciate the humor, and I think I did like it at first. And it's sad that these last six episodes have caused this brain rot that I'm just in this funk. But thank you guys for helping break me out of it. Hopefully these jokes will be funny on this analysis.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. So I'm curious. So here's the first thing. Like, I definitely found this funny, where he was like, Like, how do you know the guy with the mustache isn't following us? Oh, because he just turned down the street with a bunch of circus clowns.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was pretty funny because it was just like...
It flips expectations.
Yeah, it's a subversion of expectations, yeah. The I have a cousin in blank that just kept going on, I didn't find it funny at all. I understood it was a running joke, but I didn't get why it was funny.
It wasn't really a payoff for it.
There was sort of a payoff, but I didn't feel like it justified how often it existed.
I don't think the jokes needed to have a payoff, though.
I think
it was just like a running thing. Like for him, like for Y, that was his shtick, and then for X was all these, you know, horribly sounding code words or these really cliche metaphors.
Well, see, I didn't find both.
Well, my question is, is there something that makes it objectively funny other than the fact that it's a thing? Like, I could say, okay, my thing I say, boy howdy,
you
I am loudy
like the repeated
every
humor?
5 seconds. Well, right. Like that, it's, there's like the, where we make fun of the, you don't like the Caleb burger? Whenever I say that, it's funny, but it's because it's a run-on, or it's a reference to a joke we made in the past. And the reason that was funny is because we were amused at the delivery of that line.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time it's just a callback to the delivery of that line. But if we just chose a random assortment of words to say over and over, I don't think that would necessarily be funny. So is there something about the I have a cousin in blank that makes it funny other than the fact that it's repeated?
I see your point on that one, because usually like it's definitely not going with the rule of threes. Like, there's not a whole lot of change in the jokes. Like, oh, I have a cousin here or whatever. One place I think would have been really great if they had that is when they're in that closet trying to find the secret passageway or whatever. You know, he kind of tries to copy X and say, like, you know, like two bedbugs in Alaska at Christmas. I think it would have been really great there. Like, oh, I have a cousin in Alaska. Well, like, that actually would have been a really good setup for
funny.
That.
Like Agent X says that?
X says it?
Oh,
no,
that would
like,
have been really
did,
funny. That would have been perfect.
Agent
I was not thinking about
that.
I was thinking just why, thinking, oh yeah, Alaska, I have a cousin there.
No,
but yeah,
that would have just been annoying.
Your idea sounds
see,
funnier.
The analysis of this is that I'm not as... See, good jokes, I think a lot of good jokes are subversions of what you think is going to happen. So if he's talking about his cousin, I'm like, okay. And then he mentions his cousin again, I was like, okay. And then we get a cousin reference from the other guy. It's like, oh, that was funny. And there's your payoff. You set up the joke well, and you paid it off well.
Right. And fun fact, that is actually exactly how scientifically humor works, is that it's always a subversion of something that you thought was going to happen. Chemically, what happens in your brain is when someone is telling you a joke, your brain, it's going along, like the synapses they're forming, the neurons are firing. And when the punchline happens and it's something that you didn't expect, neurons are firing along a path that was previously formed and are forced to make a sudden jolt to something you have never formed in your life. That's why a joke isn't as funny when you've heard the punchline before, because you've already made that synaptic connection.
If we're talking joke theory, we have to bring up Other Side of the Desert humor. It's been a long thing on this podcast.
Exactly.
One of the earliest jokes we analyzed and like we went into detail on of saying this is why this joke is funny is and I can't be loud because it's very late at night. But you
and
get
like,
the idea.
Other Side of the Desert humor is the same way. Like, people don't expect you to do the joke that long. And that's the synaptic connection. It's like, how long is this going to keep going?
It keeps going.
I was expecting you to be done 5 hours ago.
And so if
I was expecting you to run out of cousins by now.
Yeah, so the it seems like the payoff for the weird witticisms that X has is Y trying to make up his own. But if it had just been that he's just constantly mumbling on like a bug on a windshield and the wipers are coming. And then it finally was like, would you cut it out from wires? And like, they'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, or something like that. That would have been funny because it's just going on and on and on. It finally has acknowledged, but it's never really acknowledged that it's just over and over again.
I think the joke there, it's definitely always like, those are always a parody, if I'm understanding it correctly, like old timey radio shows. It's always like, I was sitting in my office when suddenly that girl walked into my life like a newspaper guy walking down the street to sell papers. Or, like, I'm really bad
yeah.
at this.
Yeah.
As you can tell.
Again, it's making fun of it. It's poking
but
fun
like,
at
they,
it.
But, like, oftentimes, those old-timey radio shows, they had the main character making these simile metaphor kind of statements mm-hmm. to sound cool.
The noir
and here,
narration.
He's just failing at it. Like, none of it sounds like it makes any sense. And so, I think what would make it... I think part of why it doesn't land is because there's someone in the episode saying, this doesn't make sense, but
yeah.
not ever, like, really... following up on it, and they're just kind of like, this doesn't make any sense. Well, that was the joke. You just told us what the joke is. The joke is that they don't make sense.
That it doesn't make sense.
But
yeah.
now you've explained it, and no one laughs at a joke that's been explained.
I think this episode suffers from pacing, too, is if a lot of the jokes were quicker and there wasn't reference to the joke, it was just, here's the joke. Next line of dialogue, there's a joke there. And then another line of dialogue. It might have made sense, but there's a joke. Why would you make that joke? Because it's another joke. Okay. Step, step, step. Hey, new character.
This was one
up.
Of the main things that I had an issue with. There's a term, and it's called bathos. And that word
Ooh,
bathos
I haven't heard of that.
Means an effect of anticlimax created by an unintentional lapse in mood from the sublime to the trivial or ridiculous.
Good word,
and,
Ryan.
And I'll break it down in a way that doesn't sound like it was just ripped from Wikipedia.
Because
basically, you've got something that's supposed to be like serious or dramatic or suspenseful. And when you get to the height of the suspense where it's like, oh, no, we're going to figure out what's going on. There's a joke instead. And it's, you know, like, oh, who's behind this door? Quirky the clown. What are you doing back there?
I've got
and, like,
my dancing disco
it
pigs.
Its... that sort of thing has its place. And if you're doing a thing where you constantly have that kind of thing, it can be really funny. Like, that's where most parodies fall, is, like if you're parodying a show. I think the issue this episode suffers from is because it's paralleling Rahab, which there is actual suspense involved in that, and Shadow Agent X kind of goes back and forth between seeming like an actually serious... high stakes episode because it's World War II, which, yeah, really high stakes. Like, there were not agents joking their way through World War II because it was that serious of an of a.
But I would imagine there
were.
I would imagine there were old time radio dramas about that.
Right, and like that's something that like if I was
probably not because it was still happening when Golden Age right. Radio was around
yeah,
the time
then
of
never
World
mind.
War
II. You don't have an excuse then.
But yeah, no, like if I were to listen to a World War II drama, I would want it to be serious because it's World War II, and there's just sort of some things that you don't kind of joke about. You don't you don't make it quirky and kooky, and I'm not sure. I'm not going to come down on this episode and be like, how dare they for this? It's just sort of an odd choice to be like, World War II. Yeah, that's the one, that's the episode that we want to have agents that are silly. Because, well, yeah, I mean, the Hildy? Is that her name?
Yeah, Hildy.
Hildy says it at the end, like, these people are being killed, and that's terrible, and I don't want that to happen. To the two agents who have been joking with each other this entire episode and, like, kind of taking their jobs in a very odd way. Like, there were plenty of those kind of sayings, like code phrases that people would say to each other. And it is kind of funny that these phrases are so silly. It's just not funny when it's set in World War II because... it was actually serious. And so I kind of have trouble in this episode going back and forth between, oh, I should care about this because the plight of the Jews and the seriousness of that. And like, what if Shadow Agent X doesn't succeed in his mission? Like, that could cost lives. But then I'm like, oh, well, but also Shadow Agent X is an idiot because he keeps making these similes and metaphors that don't make any sense. So he's like, that's actually my second point. There isn't actually a straight man. Often in comedy, especially like Abbott and Costello, there's mm-hmm. the guy who is the straight man, and he's saying, look, it's common sense. Who is over there? What's over there? And I don't know who's on third. And then the other guy's like, yeah, I don't know what's going on. La, 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 la. kind of thing.
Yeah.
And here there is no straight man. Both characters are equally absurd, I would argue.
Yeah, and they're kind of more like a Martin and Lewis, because like with Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, they're kind of like a comedy duo like Abbott and Costello, but both of them had, I mean, Jerry had a little bit more of the comedy, but Dean would have times where he would have jokes, or not just set up the jokes, but actually have the jokes himself.
Yeah.
Which and I didn't care much for those shows as much.
Sure. Yeah. And that's probably why, like, it's good to have a straight man. Like, even Bob and Larry, sometimes Bob does ridiculous things and sometimes Larry is wise, but by and large, it's understood that if someone's going to be kooky, it's Larry. And if someone's going to be wise or grounding, it's going to be Bob.
There is a
VeggieTales.
There's a part in, like, it's one of the later VeggieTales episodes. I'm still, after I think a year and a half, trying to work my way through those episodes. There's one where Bob's absent. And I think it's either Larry and Junior or Larry and Petunia or something like that. And the theme plays. And I'm like, I don't know why Bob doesn't like this song. And it's boring because there's nobody there to react to it.
Right. Yeah. I love that running gag.
My favorite one of those is actually, I think, the final VeggieTales episode in which Larry goes, "Why don't you like that song, Bob?" And he's like, I don't mind it. It's just I don't like being. And so would we. And then at the end he goes, "Interrupted." So the lore is like he doesn't like just being interrupted from it. He likes the song itself. Anyway, keep going.
But yeah, I think those two things, it being in World War II, and so I'm conflicted on whether to feel serious or laugh at it. And then also neither of them are a straight man, and so I don't know who to go to as my source of, like, this person is gonna be commonsensical and this other guy's gonna be weird. And so I have like something to ground me and make sure that I know who to listen to. And so the problem is, what that leaves me at is a place where I can't care about anything. And, like, I don't mean that in a I hate this episode kind of way. I mean that if you're going to have a humorous episode, you have to have something that's subverting my expectations. But because I don't have a grounding agent and I don't. Hey, grounding agent. Haha.
Hey!
But because I don't have a grounding agent, and because I don't have an understanding of whether this is going to be a serious or a silly episode, because it keeps going back and forth, I can't form expectations. I don't have an expectation that the next line is going to be silly, or that the next line is going to be serious, or that the next line delivered by Agent X is going to be serious or funny versus the next line by Agent Y. And so I had trouble laughing at most of this episode because I was just not forming expectations for what anyone would say, and thus there was not any subversion of expectations that hadn't been formed.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, I think they were serious in the parts when they should be, when they're talking about the Jews. Like, that last scene is, like, no, pretty much no jokes. I mean, Y talks about his cousin a little bit, but it's delivered in a lot more of a subdued tone there. And also, too, it's, we're, like, nearly pretty close to 100 years removed from that, so I don't think it's, like, you know, too soon or anything for having any kind of, like, spies or thing like that in World War II. But that's just my opinion.
Well, you could be right about that.
How many years did you say?
Nearly 100. Because, like, in the 30s, I think. Late 30s, early 40s.
Sorry, wait, World War II? Or what?
Yeah.
Well, World War II was 1941. Right, 1939 was the start, right? And then 41 was when America got involved. So that would have, at the time of this episode,
would have been like 60 years.
Yeah, only 60 years. Only like 65 years. Which isn't that big of a difference, and I think I'm leaving this more to Ryan to duke it out.
Well, it's actually closer to 80 years.
No.
We're in the 2020s now.
Well, I'm talking about when this episode was produced.
I don't think that the seriousness of the war is necessarily dependent on how close to you, like, how close era-wise you are to it. Like, I think the seriousness of the war is based on, like, how many people were exterminated in it. And, like, it was
I'm not discounting that.
It was a very brutal thing. And so my argument here is not, we can't have anything funny in relation to a war. I guess my point is that if you're going to have a character that you create where it's like, this is an agent who is cloak and dagger in the middle of World War II, the expectation of the audience is going to be, oh, well, this is kind of serious, isn't it? I mean, like, these are life and death stakes. And it goes back and forth between telling us that it is and telling us that it isn't. Because it goes to, like, they're being followed. Okay, if they're being followed, they could be killed.
Oh, wait, but then they're not being followed anymore, just randomly.
Oh, right. You see, like, that's the thing. It's like, I would expect, and, like, I did laugh a little bit about that, but then also, like, they were still being followed. And at one point, they're like, we're being followed. This person's walking up to us. Oh, nothing we can do now. Well, you could get shot. There is definitely something you probably should do.
Well, it's also a little hard to listen to this on repeat listens, because when you listen to it a second time, you know that this is a World War II scenario. And so you hear all these antics happening. And I don't know where I personally sit on this, but I can definitely understand Ryan's point. And you know that they're being followed by Nazis. And this is going to get a real world parallel at the end. And then you get to the end in the first listen through, and you're like, oh, that's serious. But then the second listen through, it's like, I can't really take this humorously because there is serious stuff going on. I get what you mean, Ryan. I know where you're coming from.
Yeah. I think if we could pivot real quick.
Let's pivot.
I'd be interested in talking about the moral.
Oh, yeah. It's awful.
Ooh, wow.
Don't do it.
What'd y'all think of that?
No, absolutely not.
I think it's better than the Daniel parallel two episodes back.
It is.
I will agree with you on that.
Yeah. That's varying degrees, like a 1 versus a 2 out of 10 if we're talking about a moral. This is absolutely the wrong thing that Justin should have done here. I understand why he did it, but it's unethical and not the best moral decision for him to do.
So you're saying you think that Justin's decision to tell Janet Gray instead of the police, you think that's the problem?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I'm curious. So I'm looking at it maybe a little bit more of a meta thing.
Okay.
Not to say that you're wrong.
No, it's okay. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
That he should have talked to the police or a supervisor instead. Because we even hear earlier, he's like, wait, what? Isn't that illegal?
Yeah, he explicitly says it.
And you turn to the newspaper woman?
Because that's what the episode wants you to do, and it furthers the plot, pushes it forward.
Right.
For meta
reasons. But no, on a more meta commentary, like, going back to what the Hildy character says, she talks about, like, how the reason she wants to help is because these people are in trouble, and she knows that they're God's people. And I think sort of the generic
do the right moral thing, even though it's hard.
Yeah, you do something, you should do things even if they're dangerous, if they help people, I think is the idea. Because that's sort of the only parallel between the Hildy character and Rahab. Because Rahab,
yes,
she wasn't doing it for the Israelites. She was doing it because she feared God. Whereas this character, Hildy, she's doing it because she thinks that the Jews are God's people. And to a degree, she talks about how she fears God, but more so she cares for the people. Either way, both characters are willing to, or both individuals.
They both don't want to be killed, yeah, and they don't want their families killed either.
Well, why would would Rahab be killed is the thing. They don't suspect
her. She would have been killed with everyone else.
Oh, she would have been killed by... Oh, okay. I thought that in this episode it was more a concern that Hildy was going to be killed by the Germans if they found out. That's the thing. Because the parallel doesn't even, like, America wasn't going to kill all Germans. They weren't going to bomb Germany, you know?
No, so she's not afraid that she's going to die because she's going to be attacked. I think the point is that Hildy, by even talking with the Americans and helping them, is risking the wrath of Germany.
And she's also tied to several bigwigs when it comes to the Nazi party. So if the Allies did come there, then she might be caught in the crossfire. Or, like, oh, you're associated with these people? Well, we're going to try you now, too.
Well, we don't really get an indication in Scripture. I'm reading through Joshua 2 right now. There's not really any worry from Rahab. It's like, oh, I don't want them to find out about me. It's at the beginning, she's like, yeah, they ran away. And then they go to the gates, and she's like, whew, okay, that was easy.
Well, I think so. Just because the Bible doesn't say that it's that she didn't feel that way, it doesn't mean that she didn't.
Right, but so then we're reading something into Scripture that's not explicitly
there. Here's one consideration. The ribbon that is left in the window, I've heard it argued mainly in the Adventures in Odyssey episode, but
yes,
I kind of agree with this this analysis, that the leaving of the ribbon in the window, the rope, scarlet rope or whatever, was a test of her faith. Because if someone noticed in Jericho, there's a rope hanging outside of Rahab's house, maybe she helped someone in or out using that rope. That would implicate her and she would be in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving it there was a sign and a test of her faith that she would be protected if she did so, which would indicate that there, for that to be a test of faith, she would have to have a potential risk associated there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it's kind of reading into it, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I recognize that, and I don't, it's not an argument that I would, like, defend with my life by any means. It's just like we can theorize about this. As far as the moral, like, I guess my question was, do we agree with the moral as far as, like, we should be able to do dangerous things?
Yes.
We should be okay with doing dangerous things to help people, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'll say again, part of the strange thing in these past six episodes has been that because I come into each episode thinking, okay, you're going to have to do a good job. then the writing's going to have to be solid. It's going to have to be a good moral. And the episode starts with not so great directing and then a moral that I very much disagree with, leading into a story that's intertwined not great with a Bible story, culminating with a decision that I very strongly disagree with. This is what, if we reviewed this episode around like season 7 or 8, this might be what I would consider to be the worst episode of Gilead so far, but just because it's surrounded by these other episodes, it's hard. My perspective is very much changed by Let Them Eat Cake and Fairly Weathered Friends and things like that. You know where I'm coming from, right, Ryan? I don't want to continually be down on this. I don't want to be harsh where I'm not supposed to be, but it's been a lot to get through, you know?
It definitely feels like a quality slump.
Yeah. So,
well, I think I'm not sure, like, so the moral itself, it sounds like more like you're having an issue with the situation of how it's applied, like in Justin's situation, but
well and
like
then
you think he misapplied it, but the actual moral that was in the story is valid, right?
Well, that's what I was saying earlier, is I think the climax with Hildy is fine, but I don't think it's excellent. And therefore, since it accomplishes what it's supposed to do, but it doesn't appropriately tie in with what's happening on Gilead. If it did, it might have been great. Like with Mud Pies and Blind Eyes, it was almost a fantastic episode. It was a fine episode as it was, because the Bible story and the application in Gilead didn't really tie together. If they had, that would have been great. But here, because I disagree with one, I think the other's fine, it's just I have to go with the Gilead side and say, yeah, no, this is not strong. I'd like to like this episode. I really would. But I don't think the tie-in worked at all. So, yeah, that's where we are. Shall we wrap this up?
Yeah.
Yep.
Ryan, pun rating.
Yeah, 0 out of 10. There is no pun. It's just just Shadow Agent X.
It is a thing that happens.
Yeah.
All right.
And my final thought on the episode, I think that it was a very experimental episode that I kind of give props to them for trying it.
Sure.
Like especially like with our recent interviews of Lori and John, one thing I took away from both of those is that those are both two very creative writers.
Yes.
They love to try new things. They'll take stuff that they see in pop culture and say, what if we did something like that? And they try to not copy it, but like find some way to do a creative thing with a similar idea in Gilead. And to their credit, it's a very noble effort to try something new like that. I think where we keep coming down on this is that they're doing a ton of new shticky kind of things that are interesting and creative, but I think they're missing some sort of simpler tenets of just basic story structure. They kind of get left in the dust, and like the story structure or the making sure that story beats towards the end are earned by what you do earlier in the episode in such a way that it makes it more compelling.
How about you just have characters who are consistent and a moral that's true? If we start off with that, that fixes basically every problem from the past six episodes. And I think it also fixes this one.
To an extent, yeah.
Yeah, like it with the showdown, the issue I had was I didn't think it was consistent with Tim's character that he would jump to the judgmental nature like that. But I thought that if it did, then it'd be a great episode. That's the same thing here. I might actually like it. I still wouldn't say it would be great, but I might actually think this episode is good. if you had something that tied into the surrounding context in a on a good moral way. So yeah, I agree with you, Ryan, on that. Okay, ready for the wraps?
Let's do it.
This series is long and these reviews are long, but we are making it through. I think we only have one episode left before things brighten up, so we shall see about that. Ryan, thank you so much for doing this long podcast. I always appreciate you on these episodes.
Yeah.
And Austin, thank you for joining us again. I appreciate you kind of taking over the beginning of this one and telling us what you liked about it, telling us what you thought was good, and being willing to have this discussion. This is always a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's always fun talking to you all.
All right, and we don't need to kick you anywhere because I don't know when we're going to have you back on the podcast. Hopefully sometime soon. But in the meantime, I'm going to say it today. Go to returntogilead.com. You can visit on any mobile device or any desktop, laptop, whatever you want to do. Let us know what you thought of this episode. If you think that these episodes, this series of episodes, is actually really, really great and we're just missing something about it, please let us know. We would like to know. And in the meantime, next episode, we're going to be reviewing 144, Foul Territory. Not with Austin, but with Ryan and me. So, until then, I'm Michael.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Austin.
Snap you away!
What?
Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you all in the next episode as we once again return to Gilead.